Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our telephone town hall. First, let me wish you a happy new year on behalf of myself and the city of Brampton. My name is Alain Orman. I'm the emergency manager for the city. Chief Boys, our usual moderator, is on vacation this week, so he will not be joining us. We have some guests tonight that will be able to answer your questions and give you some feedback on what we are doing right now. First, let me remind you that if you want to ask a question, you need to press star 3 on your phone to ask a question. So you can start putting your questions in right away, and you know, we will start moderating. So tonight you're going to be hearing from our mayor, Mayor Brown. And we also have some of our task force chairs. Councillor Vicente, in particular, is online. Will be joining us, and will be, you know, giving you some updates. We are waiting for Dr. Lowe to join us. Dr. Lawrence Lowe is our medical officer of health from the Region of Peel. Also, Dr. Naveed Mohammed, who is the president and CEO of William Osler Health System. We also have online from the Peel Regional Police, Deputy Randy Patrick. We have also from the Peel Regional Paramedic Services, Chief Peter Dundas. We have also Paul Morrison, who is our Bylaw and Enforcement Director. And we're happy to have on the line as well our CEO, David Barrick. So all of these guests are going to have an opportunity to, for an update. On my side, on the emergency management aspect, we're happy to say that we continue to work mostly with our vulnerable population, with, of course, services to all our residents. But in particular, I can tell you that we've been working on a program for homeless people, and we have now finalized plans to create in the downtown Brampton a drop-in center out of the cold program that will be ready very soon in the next couple of weeks at the most to take in shelter and provide them with a meal, with the warm beverages, also some counseling, some health support. Basically, medical professionals will be on site to help them with any medical situation they may have, and also some counseling to help them reintegrate society and help them get a job, get whatever they need to be able to function better. So we have that. We've been working on that. We had the Knights Table also has now a mobile feeding truck. So basically, this truck will bring food, will bring meals to places where vulnerable population are in making it easier for them to access those meals, whereas they'd have to, before that, to drive or get driven or take the bus to get to the Knights Table Center. So that's another good initiative that is becoming fruitful. And then last, we're still working on making sure that there are enough test sites around Brampton to allow you to go and get the test that you need. And we are also working with the Region of Peel in particular and the province on the vaccination plans. But I'll let our medical professionals tell you more about those. So that's the updates from my side. I am now very happy to pass it on to our mayor, Mayor Patrick Brown.
Thank you very much, Alain, and welcome to our...
Yeah, we're sorry. We're back now. We're sorry we had the technical difficulty here and we got cut, but we're back.
Okay.
Mayor Brown is back. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Sorry for the technical glitch there. We lost connectivity here at the EOC, where I am with Alain. That's our Emergency Operations Center for the city. Hoping everyone can hear me loud and clear. This has been a tradition. We've had these COVID-19 teletown halls every 3 weeks since the start of the pandemic to make sure that you, the residents of Brampton, are kept up to date, that you hear the same briefings that I hear from Alain, from first responders, from our hospital leadership, and from public health. I believe transparency is critical during a pandemic. And, you know, it's been hard. We know that Brampton has been at the epicenter of this fight against COVID-19. So we've got a number of updates tonight. I believe it's been almost a month since we last met. We were delayed because of the holidays and didn't have a meeting last week. I don't think anyone wanted to have a teletown hall on New Year's or Christmas, but we're back on track, and I'm going to share with you the update since we last spoke. As you recall from our last teletown hall, I was advocating to have an isolation center in Brampton. I was frustrated that the federal government had funded isolation centers in Toronto and in Mississauga, but not in Brampton. And so we got some good news on December 24th. The provincial government agreed to fund potentially three isolation centers in Brampton, and particularly outline Brampton as the reason they are bringing on this new initiative. The reason that's great is for people living in crowded living conditions, they may not have a safe place to isolate. And an isolation center, you know, there's some misconceptions about an isolation center. It's not a jail for people with COVID. It's a hotel, and it's voluntary. Keyword, it's voluntary. If you don't have a safe place to isolate, you can get a hotel room, and Peel Region Human Resources is going to run it. There'll be health workers that are contracted to work in this facility to let you know when it's safe to go back to your family so that you don't pass the virus on to anyone in an unnecessary fashion. We know that this virus has spread very fast in industrial settings, and that has gone into household spread. And so this is a mechanism to help protect the public. And so I want to thank the government of Ontario for this support of helping us set up isolation centers. The province has committed $12 million to targeted support in high-priority communities, which Brampton is included, and $42 million for isolation centers across hotspot regions. And so both those funding envelopes we are eligible for in Brampton. The next thing that I wanted to mention is I know this is tough right now during the lockdown, but I think it's important to recognize that as numbers escalate, even though the vaccine rollout has started, you know, there's still a number of tough days ahead. But we will get through this. And one of the signs of encouragement is that by January 21st, those in long-term care, those who work in long-term care, will have been vaccinated, those that want to be vaccinated. That's the commitment the province has made. And so very soon, not only will we have vaccinated long-term care workers, but also hospital workers. So those on the front lines will have been vaccinated. The city doesn't have a role in the rollout of vaccines. That's up to the federal government that provides the supply and the provincial government that decides the priority list. But they've said that the regions under lockdown, the regions that have been hardest hit, are going to get priority access to vaccines. And so hopefully that means our seniors, our vulnerable communities in the very near future are going to be vaccinated. And so that's going to change the dynamic. When our most vulnerable residents aren't at risk, it means that some of the restrictions that we see right now may no longer be necessary. So I know it's been tough, but have patience because there is light at the end of the tunnel. There really is. This rollout of vaccines is going to change the dynamic. And for those small businesses out there that are struggling, we hear you. And I can't wait till we get to the point that we're past this. I should also mention that we are providing a number of winter activities for families to enjoy that have been approved by public health. And the list of activities that are permitted are at brampton.ca/winterwonderland. And so skating, snowshoeing, walking on trails, there's a number of outdoor activities that you can undertake. I know because recreation centers are closed and team sports aren't allowed, that there's not as many opportunities for physical activity, but we hope that the Winter Wonderland framework that the city set up will give residents some additional opportunity to enjoy Canada and Brampton during our winter. So on that note, I'm looking forward to the questions tonight. I'm looking forward to getting your feedback. But once again, the reason we have this briefing really is to make sure that you can hear from our top officials. And I just want to say in conclusion that whether it's Chief Nish and his team at the Peel Police, Bill Boyce, his team at Brampton Fire, Peter Dundas and the paramedics, our first responders in Peel Region are exceptional. We are so fortunate to have some great leaders. And Dr. Naveed Muhammad, who you're going to hear from, you know, he is one of those pandemic heroes. He runs Osler Health for us. He runs Brampton Civic and Peel Memorial. You know, when a lot of people during the holidays were in the comfort of their homes, he was actually, even though he runs the hospital, he goes in on a regular basis to take a normal shift as a doctor because he wants to feel what it's like. He wants to keep in touch with the front lines of healthcare, and he continues to be an exceptional leader for us in healthcare in Peel Region, and he does a great job with the resources that he is given. And Dr. Lawrence Lowe is on call at all hours with Peel Public Health and has been incredibly dedicated. And I think his experience in infectious disease with the federal government before he worked for Peel Public Health is a knowledge set that he brings to this task that is particularly helpful given that we're in a pandemic. So you got some great local leaders, and I hope you enjoy hearing from them tonight. And I know Dr. Lowe and Dr. Muhammad will be on this call, not just to brief you on their situation with public health in the hospital, but also to answer your questions, because ultimately we're here to serve. We're accountable to you, the residents of Brampton. So let's have a great call tonight.
All right. Thank you, Mayor Brown. Appreciate all your encouragement on this. Before we go to our next speakers, we want to start with our polling questions for tonight. So our first polling question, we're going to have three. First one is, will you get the vaccine when it is available? Press 1 for yes, 2 for no, 3 for unsure. So the question again, will you get the vaccine when it is available? Press 1 for yes, 2 for no, 3 for unsure.
And I think the vast majority of people understand that vaccines save lives, but I know there are questions. And tonight's call is going to be an opportunity to ask those questions. I think many people know that my wife, Genevieve, she's pregnant. And so there's an example of someone who may not get a vaccine because there's not guidance on that right now. And so depending on what your situation is, you may want to ask because there are, you know, there are different scenarios for different people. And that's why we've got brilliant medical minds on the call to help you with that decision. I know when my time comes, and because I'm 42, I'm not going to be a priority because I'm still younger. I think I'm still younger, but I can tell you I absolutely will get a vaccine. And I know the Canadian Public Health Agency is very careful when they approve vaccines, and they've got a good record of being cautious and doing looking at the data. But we thought by asking this question, we get an idea of where Bramptonians are, and if there are misconceptions about vaccines, we can answer them tonight. But instead of hearing more from us, I think we've got a few speakers that want to give their briefing.
But again, you're right, Mr. Mayor, and if you want to ask a question, please press star 3 on your phone now. All right. So next we'll go to our Councillor Vicente, who's on the line. He is the chair, one of the chair of the Economic Task Force, and we'll start working very closely with all of our businesses. So Councillor Vicente, please go ahead.
Thank you so much, Ellen, and thank you, Mayor Brown. And for the record, when I have the opportunity to get a vaccine, I certainly will do so. My mother, who is in a long-term care center, will be vaccinated tomorrow. And so I would encourage everyone to follow the science where they can and to get vaccinated. So good evening, everyone, and Happy New Year. We just want to remind you from the Economic Support Task Force team that we are in a lockdown, and now with this lockdown, it's so much more important than ever for us to support local. We want to encourage you to continue to order food from local restaurants or grab a gift card from a local business, and please do what you can. You know, no amount of support is too small, and every bit really helps. So let's continue to support our local businesses here in Brampton. If you do social media, use the hashtag #SupportLocalBrampton and share how and where you are supporting local businesses. With the recent lockdown, our businesses continue to have to ensure that they are abiding by the updated regulations. If you run a business and you have questions about how you can better operate your business safely, we invite you to visit our website at investbrampton.ca for the most updated information and regulations. So on behalf of myself and our co-chair for the Economic Support Task Force Regional Counselor, Michael Pleshy, I'd like to remind every business that we can be reached by email if you have questions at covid19business@brampton.ca. And with that, I'll pass it back to you, Alain. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor. We appreciate that. We also have other councillors that are not online with us tonight, but that are working feverishly in all sorts of ways to help our vulnerable population, our seniors, our youth, to make sure that nobody is left behind, and we're grateful to have all of their guidance and their support. Also, a lot of city staff working on behalf of the population of Brampton. Next, I'm going to invite Dr. Naveed Mohammed, who is online. He is the president and CEO of William Osler. And Dr. Mohammed, just to let you know, Dr. Lowe is not online yet. I'm not sure if he's going to be with us. So you might be the medical expert that we are needing to have with us tonight. So please, Dr. Mohammed, go ahead.
Thank you, and good evening, everyone. And thank you, Mayor Brown, for once again giving me a chance to speak here. I want to wish everyone a happy new year, and I'm glad to be here this evening as part of the first City of Brampton Town Hall of 2021. I hope that everyone had a safe and healthy holiday season. Since we last connected early in December, the Ontario government has launched its COVID-19 vaccine implementation plan. We at Osler are one of the hospitals in the province to be administering the vaccine in alignment with the government's three-phased framework. Now, I'm pleased to share that Brampton reached one of the most significant milestones in its fight against COVID-19. On December 22nd, Osler administered the first COVID-19 vaccine in Brampton to Ms. Wilma White, a personal support worker at Tullamore Care Community, a long-term care home in Brampton. She received one of the first Pfizer vaccines at Osler's COVID-19 vaccine clinic at Brampton Civic Hospital. This was a proud moment for us. For all of us, as our teams have worked tirelessly to provide vital care to what has been a growing number of COVID-19 patients during this pandemic. Now, since the clinic has opened, our teams have worked diligently to ramp up clinic operations. Remember, we only got the vaccine on December 23rd, so we had to ramp up these operations over the holidays. We have been doing our best to vaccinate healthcare workers who provide direct care in high-risk settings with an initial focus on staff of long-term care homes. And recently, as per the government's direction, which was given on Saturday, we have begun to vaccinate Osler clinical staff and physicians who also work in high-risk areas within the hospital. To date, we have now provided, and when I say to date, I mean to 20 minutes ago, more than 2,700 healthcare workers with the vaccine at our clinic, and later this week we will be expanding the capacity of the clinic further to vaccinate even more healthcare workers on a daily basis. We also continue to work with our partners at the Ministry of Health and Peel Public Health to coordinate the vaccination within long-term care homes and other priority groups as identified by the Government of Ontario. So while this is a momentous step for Brampton, testing continues to be an important strategy in the fight against COVID-19. Over the holiday period, our teams performed thousands of COVID-19 tests across our testing centers and the COVID-19 cold and flu clinic. Also, over the holiday season, we saw a steady number of patients admitted through our to our hospitals with COVID-19. Currently, we have 110 COVID-19 inpatients at Osler. 64 of these are at Brampton Civic. And we have 13 in the ICU across our corporation, 10 of which are at Brampton Civic. So these numbers do change from moment to moment. We keep track of it on an ongoing basis. Now, to ensure that we maintain sufficient capacity to provide care to all of our patients, not only COVID patients, but every patient that comes into the emergency department and gets admitted, we are employing a number of necessary strategies that we've been working very closely with other hospitals in the Greater Toronto Area and beyond on a coordinated regional approach to provide care to patients and managing our capacity across the healthcare system. Now, through our coordinated efforts, we are able to safely transfer patients to other hospitals who have capacity to receive care, but at the same time, we have also taken patients from other hospitals when they have run into capacity issues and we have some space. So we are truly working together within the GTA as a healthcare system, making sure that not one hospital bears the burden of COVID-19, and we're sharing the burden throughout. We also further had to reduce some non-urgent surgeries and procedures in mid-December so that we can redeploy staff to provide much-needed care and support in our clinical areas. As always, we will closely monitor this with our inpatient capacity along with the needs of our patients, and we will make the adjustments as required to provide the safest quality care to patients in our hospitals. And before I end today, I'd like to wish everyone the best for 2021. We have tremendous hope for this year. I know a challenging road still lies ahead in the next few months, but as we work to reduce the spread of COVID-19 in the community and with the growing availability of the COVID-19 vaccine, I'm optimistic that this year we will make significant progress in a fight against the virus. I appreciate your time this evening, and I'll be here to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Dr. Mohammed. We appreciate your time on this call. Next, we'll go to our deputy from Peel Regional Police. I'm going to ask Deputy Patrick, Randy Patrick, to please give us an update.
Yes, thank you, Elaine, and thank you, Mayor Brown, for having Peel Regional Police be part of this town hall meeting. And, of course, Happy New Year to all of our listeners. I just want to start by telling you that despite being impacted by COVID exposures, the Peel Regional Police staffing levels remain at a healthy level. We also have a business continuity plan to ensure that we maintain those levels of service should we encounter a significant impact on our staff as a result of the pandemic. As we look at our year-end statistics as well, I just wanted to point out a few areas where the pandemic has had a significant impact on our community. For example, here in Brampton, we've seen a decrease in residential break and enters of 33% over the totals in 2019. So you can see that more people being at home because of the pandemic has meant less opportunity for criminals to break into their homes. At the same time, our total speeding charges, other Highway Traffic Act charges, and motor vehicle collisions are all down significantly over 2019. Yet our stunt driving charges have more than doubled this year. So we've had over 500 stunt driving charges so far in 2020, and only 189 in 2019. So less vehicles on the road as a result of the pandemic have led to those still using the roads to be driving more aggressively. This has also led to a record number of fatalities in the region. We had 43 fatalities in the region this past year compared to just 23 the previous year, which is a very concerning trend. In closing, just want to remind the citizens of Brampton that the Peel Regional Police are actively following up on the Federal Quarantine Act and the 14-day quarantine periods for those returning to Canada. And so far, we have completed over 3,600 checks on individuals in the region under this act to ensure that they are abiding by their quarantine period. So again, I just want to thank you for having us join you tonight, and I look forward to hearing about the concerns of our listeners during the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Patrick. Appreciate your call. Next, we'll go to our Chief of Paramedic Services, Chief Dundas, Peter Dundas.
Thanks, Elaine, and thanks, Mayor Brown, for having me here again. These are wonderful sessions to hear from the residents of Brampton and be able to address some of their concerns. I want to wish everybody a happy new year and all the best for 2021. It's going to be a very promising year with the vaccine being rolled out, and paramedics will be part of vaccination teams commencing very soon, and are now eligible to be able to start receiving vaccine so that we can ensure the protection of all those that we're caring for. So in the absence of Dr. Lowe and being a colleague of his with the region of Peel, I'll just pass along the message. We still need to be diligent and be very, very aware that masking, hand washing, distancing, and staying at home is so, so important during this critical time. We are going to see a very positive year, as Dr. Mohammed said, and I wish you nothing but good health. And we're going to get there, folks. We promise you that. Take care. Back to you, Elaine.
Thank you, Chief Dundas. Appreciate that. We also have on the line Paul Morrison, who's our Director of Bio-Law Enforcement. Maybe, Paul, you can give us a little bit of an update from your side.
Absolutely. Thanks, Elaine. I can tell you that our staffing is good. We have almost 70 officers out there patrolling and ensuring that our community stays safe and enforcing when we have to, consulting where we need to. Over the past, from December 23rd to January 2nd, we were pretty busy. We had 367 complaints, 188 proactive investigations where we went out on our own for a total of 555 events. I can tell you for the year, we're up to 52,263 complaints or investigations, and over 8,000 of those are COVID-related. So we have been busy out there. We work in partnership with Peel Police and Randy Patrick's group. We have a great relationship back and forth. We support each other in the community. And where we can attend calls, we go as enforcement. Where we require Peel Police, they come and back us up. So we're out there. We're trying to look after your safety in the community, but we ask your cooperation. So to keep the numbers down below 10. Don't do the social gatherings and wear your masks.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Morrison. I appreciate that. Just a reminder before we go into starting to take the questions that if you have a question, you need to press *3 now on your phone, and we will be able to get your questions. So now that we want to thank all our speakers, but now we're going to go to our first question, and our first question comes from Susan. Susan, please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question, and thank you for this forum. I'm calling on behalf of my mother, who's 84 years old, and she doesn't want to have the COVID vaccine. In 2009, we both went for our H1N1 vaccination, and then in 2010, she contracted Guillain-Barré syndrome and was hospitalized for a few months, was lucky to survive. And over the years, we've had inconsistent advice from medical specialists and doctors, general practitioners, about whether she should have the flu vaccine, and she has chosen not to have it. So where do I go for expert advice and good statistics on the risks of not having the COVID vaccine versus her possible reaction again? I want to convey some good advice to her.
Right. So I think you came to the right place. You came to the town hall meeting tonight, and that's the place where we're going to pass this question on to Dr. Mohammed and see what he has to offer on this. Dr. Mohammed.
Yes, thank you for the question. First of all, Susan, I don't think you will get consistent advice on vaccination side effects, and especially the fact that the Guillain-Barré syndrome occurred a few months, I think you said 2010 and then 2011, maybe you said 2009, 2010, but a few months after your mom got the vaccine. The only thing I can tell you from my practice and medical knowledge is that, one, each vaccine triggers an immune response within your body through a different mechanism. And the mechanism that the COVID-19, at least the vaccines that are currently approved, the Moderna and the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, use a different mechanism than what was used in the H1N1 vaccine. In the end, you have to weigh the benefits and the risks of not getting the vaccine versus getting the vaccine. For example, if the patient was, say, less than 40 or less than 50 years old and had a bad experience with the vaccine in the past, I might say that, listen, you're less than 50. If you're going to get COVID, most likely you're going to be okay. You're going to fall ill for 7 to 8 days, and then you'll be fine. So maybe you can err on the side of not getting the vaccine. When you get into an age of over 80, the results of those patients getting COVID-19 are not very encouraging. So at that age, the risk of getting COVID-19 and doing well with it are a lot lower than the risks of, you know, surviving with a COVID-19 vaccine. So what I'm trying to say is that getting some side effects from the vaccine may happen, even though we haven't seen that much in the thousands of vaccines that have been given in Ontario over the last number of days. I'm on a call with the CEOs of all 18 organizations that have given vaccines every morning at 9 a.m., sometimes twice a day, and no significant side effect has been reported so far. And then an 81-year-old, if it was my mom, I would rather have her have the vaccine than get COVID. That's the best advice I can give you. The decision is still, of course, your mom's, but that's the best I can tell you at this point.
Thank you, Dr. Mohammed. Appreciate that. Next, we're going to go to a question by Len. Len, if you're on, please go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah, I was wondering if you advise that we should wear a mask at all times outdoors.
So I believe Dr. Lowe is on the call now.
Hello, Mr. Mayor. How are you? Good evening.
What advice, Dr. Lowe, do you have for wearing a mask outdoors?
No, absolutely, and thanks for the question, Glenn. I think it's a really great question. In general, absolutely, there's some instances where you should be wearing a mask outdoors. If you are meeting someone for an essential purpose out of your home, so again, we really discourage meeting individuals outside of your home who you do not live with, unless there happens to be an essential reason to meet in person. So whenever you meet anybody, whether it's indoors or outdoors outside of your home, really recommend that you wear a mask. More broadly, certainly if you're wearing a mask outdoors, there is that additional a level of protection, particularly if you're in a crowded area where there may not be certainty that you're passing through with transients amongst other people from a 2 meter gap. But in general, we do know that outdoor transmission is lower than indoor transmission. We also do know that in the winter, outdoor transmission is a bit more likely than there's a slightly higher risk than in the summer, just owing to drier air that can allow droplets to suspend maybe a bit longer. But the risk outdoors still remains largely low compared to indoors. And so if you're planning to stick by yourself, stay away from other people, maintain physical distancing, and not really meet people in close contact for an extended period of time, then an outdoor mask is not necessary. But in general, the one thing I do enjoy about wearing my mask outdoors is it does keep my face warm on these cold days. So thanks so much. I'll pass it back to, I'm not sure who the moderator is, but perhaps it's the chief or Alain.
It's Alain this week. The chief's on vacation. Thank you very much, Dr. Lowe. By the way, we have about 8,000 people on the call right now.
And I should mention, Alain, our chief is on vacation here in Canada.
Yes, that's right. He's not going anywhere. Okay. Next, I want to go to the results of the first poll. Sorry. So the question was, will you get the vaccine when it is available? And the poll results is 67% of the responders said yes, 9% said no, and 24% said unsure. So 67% of the people are saying yes to the vaccine. and only 9% are saying no. There's still a portion unsure, 24%. So thank you for that poll. So next we're going to go to another question. The next question we have is from Michael. Michael, please go ahead with your question.
Hi, Michael Christen, Natalie Gunn, small business ventilation contractor. It's more for Mayor Brown and Dr. Muhammad. These new sites that have been realized now, do we know what locations they're going to be in? Is that known by the city? And have they been procured, these locations? Are they existing buildings or new?
Yes, so
and will they be segregation or isolation type facilities?
So we'll let Dr. Lowe into that, but because it's being run by
the Region Appeal, particularly Human Resources, but these isolation centers are voluntary. They tend to be hotels. And Dr. Lowe can explain where they're intended to be in Brampton and how they work.
Thanks so much, Mayor Brown, and thanks for the question. So just to clarify, it's Region Appeal Human Services that actually is running this, through the expertise that they have within the housing side of things. My understanding is that they are very close to finalizing the sites, and there will be three new sites that will be serving Bramley, Northeast Brampton, as well as Malton at this point in time. So thanks very much, and I'll pass it back to Elaine.
Yes, thank you. And just to clarify, also, these are in existing buildings. They're not being built for this purpose. They're primarily hotels that are being used. So thanks for your question. Next, we're going to go to Athena. Athena, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Thank you. My question is there any way for stores to stop whole families from coming into the store? I've seen increase where husband, wife, and all the children are coming to the store instead of what we initially were reporting in March is, one person per household shopping, because this has increased dramatically, and I'm wondering if this is also another reason why Brampton's numbers are so high.
I believe Paul Morrison, our Director of Bylaw Enforcement, could speak to that.
Hi, Athena. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, you know what? There isn't a limitation on who can go into the store. It's a regulation put down by the province that the stores can only have, a maximum of 25% occupancy. So they're limiting people coming in. They have to have a safety plan on how they're letting those people in and where they can go in the store, but there's nothing specific that says you can't go in with your, in your case, you might want to take your sister, your brother, your mother, your father. There's nothing that limits that. So that's up to each individual store to dictate that. But like I said, that's a provincial regulation as opposed to a city bylaw.
Paul, if I could add on to that as well, just really quickly, and you can confirm once I'm done my comment, I believe that stores can set their own policies, though, if they wish to limit it to one family member, then that would be, I believe, within the store's prerogative. And I think the more important part of the question was, is this contributing to Brampton's high numbers? I think Brampton's COVID-19 transmission picture is incredibly complex. But what we do know, and especially now that this virus has been circulating globally for a year, is that transient contact there's a very remote risk associated with transient contact spreading the virus. What is typically more the cause of transmission is close contact, within the same airspace, within the 2-meter airspace of someone for more than 10 to 15 minutes, and typically someone that you don't usually live with. Typically also someone that you're not masked with, and also typically indoors. So certainly transient contact in retail settings, it's a very remote risk, and so certainly whatever precautions are being taken, the big thing is just always to remember distancing and masking as much as possible so that you can just take that concern out of the equation. And Paul, I'll pass it back to you just to confirm my understanding about stores being able to set their own policies.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Lowe. Athena, yes, the doctor is right. As I said before, the stores do come up with their own safety regulations, and they can write in that only one family member per visit, but they choose not to. So it's their prerogative to do so.
All right. Thank you both. We'll go to the next question. We'll go to a question by Vicky. So, Vicky, please go ahead with your question.
Yes, I'm here. Thank you very much. Really appreciate you taking our questions. So my question is probably for the bylaw enforcement people. It's about exercising outdoors. A group of us do Tai Chi, and we've been missing our Tai Chi. So we've been trying to meet outside in a small group, less than 10 people. We stand, you know, more than 6 feet apart. We wear our masks. We keep it short, and we're, you know, we're doing it outside. Today we were told that we weren't allowed to do that. Is that correct, or are we allowed to do some exercise together?
So I think Dr. Lowe and Paul Morrison may want to add their perspective here. You know, we're interpreting the provincial emergency rules, and as mayor, I think physical activity, getting outdoors is so important, and we've tried to create a framework for activities that are allowed under the provincial rules, and it's been difficult trying to adapt. This is the first time I've been asked a question about Tai Chi, so I apologize for not having an answer myself, but Paul and Lawrence, if you could share your perspective on whether this would be permitted, and if not in numbers of 10, in what numbers would it be permitted at a local park?
So if Dr. Lowellme, I'll go first. Vicky, you know what? You can have that group outside. We encourage you to go outside. We encourage you to exercise with the social distancing that Dr. Lowe will talk about, keeping the distance, the mass. It sounds like you're doing everything right. I have the great opportunity to sit in on the mayor's briefings every week, and I see how excited he gets about talking about outdoor activities and getting people out for their mental health and for their physical well-being. So we want to encourage these situations. So we want to get up to 10. Anything more than 10 would be a gathering, considering a gathering, and that's prohibited by the provincial regulation. So that I would say 10 is your cap. Stay outside, practice the social distancing things, and you should be fine.
And just to add to that, Paul nailed it on the head. You know, certainly exercise is considered an essential reason, certainly the ideal would be to exercise on your own or with people you live with. But recognizing that there are people who will need to exercise in other ways, especially with Tai Chi in groups, the provincial regulations does permit for that. In addition to what Paul said around physical distancing and wearing a mask. In the course of undertaking a group exercise, making sure you're staying apart. And, Tai Chi is not high vigorous, strenuous sort of activity where you wouldn't be able to wear a mask. So ideally that would be something you would wear. The only other thing I would add is we do know as well that there is transmission that occurs if people do stuff before and after the activity. So I think really your goal would be to show up for the Tai Chi, make sure you're following the precautions outside with the Tai Chi, and try to avoid any post-event closeness or sort of kibitzing afterwards, just to really limit the possibility of close contact transmission. Thanks for the question.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Lowe and Mr. Morrison. Next, we're going to go to Elaine. Elaine, you have a question.
Hi, good evening. Hi, good evening. My question is relating to allergic reaction. To first of all, one, my daughter has cerebral palsy, and also my son has food and penicillin allergies. Now I've been hearing about reactions on the food allergies and whatnot, but what about one with cerebral palsy?
All right, we'll let our doctors, so maybe Dr. Lowe and then Dr. Mohammed give some insight on this question, please.
And sorry, I didn't catch this. I believe this was a child, Alam. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. I believe it's the lady's daughter. I don't know what age though. Elaine, can you specify?
She's 30 years old, but
developmentally
she's delayed. She's around like 10, 15 years old.
Yeah, okay. Sorry. The biological age is 30, so that's super helpful. And sorry that I missed that part of the question initially. At this point in time, I don't believe cerebral palsy is a contraindication to obtaining the COVID-19 vaccine, but I will pass it over to my patient-seeing colleague, Dr. Mohammed, to confirm my understanding, at least as from what I understand from the monograph and the expertise I have.
Yes, thank you.
So cerebral palsy itself is not a contraindication. We are not giving the vaccine to children that are less than 15 years old right now. As far as allergic reactions are concerned, it's just like anything else. If you are a person that is prone to an allergic reaction, say food allergies or environmental allergies, you have the predilection to have an allergic reaction to almost any kind of vaccination or medication. So the precautions that we take are just the same. If you decide to get the vaccine and you're prone to allergic reactions, we make sure that we take precautions while giving you the vaccine. We always have a physician there, a nurse there, and we have medication present. So in case a person does have an allergic reaction, we can quickly provide you with an antidote-type medication that reverses the reaction. Every patient that gets the vaccine at Osler, after they have the vaccine, we have them wait there for 15 to 30 minutes just to make sure that they're okay and they're not getting any reactions. So having food allergies or multiple allergies are not a contraindication, which means that it's not that you can't have the vaccine. If we know that ahead of time, we will make sure that we have the staff and the equipment and the medication available to deal with it just in case you get a reaction. So that's the best answer I can give.
All right. Thank you, doctors. We appreciate that. Next, we're going to go to a question by Aaron, aimed mostly at our mayor. So go ahead, Aaron.
Hello, this is Aaron. I want to thank you, first of all, for having these town hall meetings. I've been able to listen to it whenever I'm available. But my question to the mayor and also to Dr. Lowe and Ahmed and other people on the COVID team, would you be willing to publicly promise to not go on vacation outside of the country?
I'll be happy to answer that first. I've got no plans to go on vacation, and I will be shoveling the snow with the rest of us. Rest assured you won't have any newspaper articles of me going off to the Caribbean or anywhere outside of Canada. I think it's not appropriate right now, and until public health says it's appropriate to travel, the leadership in the city of Brampton will be leading by example and following that advice of public health. And I know this was in the news last week. The number of politicians across Canada were exposed for having traveled during Christmas and New Year's and before that. And that's wrong, and it's inappropriate. And, you know, there was one case in Brampton, where a local MP went to a memorial for her father and her uncle who passed away in Seattle. I think that's a little bit different, and she's a dedicated member of Parliament. But, you know, I think anyone who travels at this time of year should give their head a shake. We've got a pandemic to deal with.
Dr. Lowe, did you want to answer that question as well?
Absolutely. Leaving aside the fact that I've got a major pandemic response to run here with the really excellent team at Peel Public Health and together with our partners in the hospitals and in the certainly here in the city of Brampton as well as throughout the region of Peel. You know, I haven't been on an airplane since February. I've got $2,000 worth of flight credit, and I have absolutely zero intention to travel until I've seen this through to the end. It's an honor and a privilege to serve the community in my current capacity. And, you know, on the topic of not just travel and the top of the rest recommendations, I'm not kidding when I say you only go out for essential reasons. I pretty much just leave the house for running on my own, exercise, groceries and essentials, sometimes to pick up takeout and to hang out with Mayor Brown at press conference. And I've done this now pretty much since March with every some outdoor excursions that I think everyone else did in the summer with just one or two people distanced. But nothing since. It's all been Zoom. It's all been WebEx. And I've really taken it seriously that I'm only out and about for the essentials, which is like work and groceries. So I would really encourage everyone to do the same thing. And that hopefully will make the difference. And if you aren't able to do the same thing, that's why we're advocating to make sure that you get the support that will allow you to stay safe. So, yeah, I promise not to travel till this thing's done.
All right. Thank you very much. Next, before, I just want to remind you that if you have questions, you need to please press *3 and be ready to ask your question. Next, we're going to go to Rosalyn.
Hi, this message is for Mayor Brown and Dr. Lowe. Mayor Brown, I heard you say at the beginning that Brampton was already receiving vaccinations at the moment. If I could ask, what is the plan for the first batch of vaccinations? And once that those are already done, when is the second batch expected? Thank you.
We'll have Dr. Naveed Muhammad speak to this more directly, but the province has outlined that the first priority will be those that work in long-term care and hospital workers. But in terms of the amount of vaccines we receive and when additional batches are going to come, I believe Dr. Muhammad can speak to that. I believe they've been vaccinating people since December 21st or around then and continue to do so every single day. And I visited the clinic they've set up. The team at Brampton Civic have done a remarkable job setting up a very effective clinic for vaccines. As more supply comes, the province will look at other ways to provide vaccines. I imagine as Canada gets a bigger supply, you'll start to see them in pharmacies down the road and maybe even central vaccine centers. But that's still to be determined based on when that supply does come to Canada. But Dr. Muhammad, anything you can share about the current rollout and how many vaccines we have right now with the Osler Health System?
Yeah, so right now, the rollout of the vaccine is completely dependent on the supply chain. I think what we need to understand is that right now it's only Moderna and Pfizer BioNTech, and they are distributing the vaccines to countries all over the world as fast as they're producing them. There is a plan to roll the vaccines out to pharmacies and perhaps family physicians when two things happen. One is that there's enough of a supply, and two, there's enough of a supply of a vaccine that can stay stable at warmer temperatures. What that means is that right now the vaccines that we're using at Brampton Civic, you need a fridge that can go down to -78°C. Dr. Lowe's team has a vaccine that also needs specialized refrigeration, not as low. So we are working in partnership with Peel Public Health and Dr. Lowe's team and Osler to try to do as many as we can. As the supply increases, the supply chain becomes more free-flowing, and the vaccines that are available, such as AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson, will be coming out with vaccines in the next few months, and the vaccines become more stable at more manageable temperatures, the program will expand. I'm not trying to skirt your question. I don't think the general public, in my personal opinion, I haven't seen this anywhere, will be able to access the vaccine earliest before March. And Mayor Brown, you asked the number of vaccines. We had a supply come in on December 23rd. We had one the week of December 23rd. We've had one the week of December 28th. We've had supplies come in this week, and we'll have some in the week of January 11th and January 18th. Each time, we've got anywhere between 3,500 and 5,000 doses. And that is about what we can give in a week. So if we're giving about 700 to 800 vaccines a day, that pretty much takes over our supply for the week. So that's where we're at. But the province, I can tell you, is in conversation daily with the procurement people, with the federal government, and everyone's pushing really hard to get as many vaccines into Ontario and into Canada so we can start what we're calling the mass vaccination process.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Mohammed. Before we go to the next questions, we're going to go to our second poll of tonight. And we've heard about workplace outbreaks. We had some questions on that. So our question here is, do you believe all workplace outbreaks should be made public? Press 1 for yes, press 2 for no. Do you believe all workplace outbreaks should be made public? Press 1 for yes, press 2 for no.
Right. And a little bit of context on that. Toronto was in the news this week for signaling that any outbreak of over 20 individuals, they would put on their website. Right now, Peel Public Health puts on their website any outbreak that is a risk to the public. You know, there are some concerns that if you don't, that if you put the names up on the website, that some businesses may not cooperate. But since this is topical this week in the news, we thought we'd love to get your opinion so we can share it, whether you believe all outbreaks should be listed on the website.
All right, so press 1 for yes and 2 for no. Thank you. Next, we're going to go to a question by Raj. So, Raj, please go ahead.
Yes. First of all, I would like to say thank you for your efforts to give all the citizens of Brampton updates on this pandemic. And vaccine is out now, so it's a light of hope. And I want to share my experience. I'm a nurse working at a hospital. I got first dose of vaccine on 23rd of December. Now, January 1st, I'm positive. Now I'm positive. My question is to Dr. Lowe. So what's his opinion on this one? I'm positive after 9 days. Thank you.
So Dr. Lowe, maybe you can answer that question, please.
Yeah, thanks so much for the question. And I apologize that in the future, if you have questions of this nature, you're also welcome to call our call center at 905-791-7700. And certainly you can share your confidential health information, with our call center staff. They can help navigate that through with you. Certainly that's one of the other pieces and aspects, I would say, in respect to the poll question with workplace outbreaks and disclosures. It's not quite all simple, a matter of yes or no, but really also just making sure that individuals and their status, are not inadvertently shared, but should the individual choose to share it themselves publicly, as you have, I'm very sorry to hear that. I think that's really about individuals still having a control over their personal health information and ensuring that there's not too much identifying information that might have other people identify what is a very significant health challenge. In respect of testing positive after a first dose, I would really welcome you again to call our contact center. We are keeping track of these. One of the challenges is, as you know, the immune response doesn't automatically mount. Typically, it reaches that peak immune response after 14 days. The other possibility is that you may have been infected at around the time of your vaccination and subsequently after the incubation period tested positive. And so there's a lot of reasons why this is happening. All of these we would really welcome if you called our call center to get further details, just so we are tracking this just to continue monitoring adverse events following the rollout of vaccination, but also situations around just ensuring that the vaccine is providing protection and coverage. But again, there's a lot of possibilities that go into why someone might test positive after receiving the vaccine, be it that they may have already been incubating or exposed at the same time, or that they didn't necessarily mount the full immune response and were subsequently inoculated with the virus. I do hope that you also stay well, and if you do have any issues with your health, especially severe difficulty breathing, etc., I'm certain that you will go to the emergency room to ensure that you're looked at promptly. But please do give our call center a call just so they can investigate your case further. Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Lowe. Next, we're going to go to Amara. Amara, please go ahead with your question.
Hi. Good evening, Mayor Patrick Brown and everyone. Actually, my question is, when you're positive with COVID-19 and after 2 weeks you quarantine, still, how do you know whether you are not any more positive? is there any follow-up, or whether you can, whether people after 2 weeks you go to, they go to store, grocery stores everywhere. So is it safe to other people?
Hey,
within
Dr.
10
Lowe.
Days, they go to work too. Sorry, they go to work too within 10 days. Is that safe?
All right, so Dr. Lowe, maybe you can answer that question, please.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for the question. To be clear, we've used time-based clearance for COVID-19 infections since about May or June. Initially, it was 14 days after the onset of symptoms, which had a margin of error and safety built into it. And subsequent to that, with more and more evidence, it was discovered that the symptoms typically last 5 to 7 days, 10 days as an outer limit, which is why the number changed to 10. And really the idea is that especially after 10 days, especially if you're already feeling better, the possibility that you are still infectious if you've tested positive for COVID is extremely remote at that point in time based on everything that we understand about how this disease works. And so you would certainly not be contagious if you were out and about in public. However, the recommendation is still that you would respect physical distancing and masking, because there's an understanding as well that we don't know how long the immunity lasts for. And we also know that we want to make sure that people are still taking precautions regardless of whether they've had the disease or not, just remembering that we're all in this together. Thanks. I'll pass back to Lynn.
Thanks, Dr. Lowe. Next, we're going to go to Stephanie. Stephanie, you're online.
Hi there. Hi.
Hey,
thanks for taking my call. My question is for the doctors. Our son is immune compromised, and he is only 14. And my question is, Brandon or Peel have any plans to allow caregivers who have people who are they're caring for at risk to be vaccinated before the mass vaccinations take place?
Okay, doctor, maybe Dr. Mohammed, are you able to answer that question?
Maybe
yeah,
do you want
I can,
me to take a stab, actually? Or that's all right, go ahead.
No, the only thing I was going to say, Lawrence, and I'm sure you can add to it, is that the province is making plans to stage the vaccination based on certain special groups. So whether it's immunocompromised people, they may include caregivers of immunocompromised loved ones, and for certainly they will include elderly people who may have asthma or congestive heart failure or lung disease. So I can't say for sure that the category that you're talking about will exist, but I think there will be categories that will ensure that certain special groups, and your situation may be one of them, get the vaccine before a healthy 35-year-old who is not in a home situation like yours gets it. So, Lawrence, I think you can add to it, but that's my understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the easiest way to explain this is that the province basically identifies various priority populations, and then it's to us in the region, together with our hospital partners and our healthcare partners, to identify what that looks like and how it looks like. So basically the province unlocks various groups, and they plan to do so, as Dr. Mohammed identified, in a staggered fashion throughout the rollout up until basically vaccine is available for broadly available for the general public in Ontario. As Dr. Mohammed identified, certainly members, people in your situation will be considered, I would imagine, by our provincial partners, but ultimately we take their lead, and at this point in time, and in phase one where the supplies are limited, the priority groups that the province has unlocked for us at this time are long-term care homes and basically resident staff and essential caregivers within long-term care homes, as well as hospital and healthcare workers at high risk, and also moving on then as well to retirement homes that are at high risk as well. So that's where things are at right now. But certainly, if you have questions around the prioritization, I would encourage you to reach out to the to our provincial counterparts and share your perspective.
All right, thank you, doctors. Before we go to our next question, we have the results of the second poll for tonight. So the question was, do you believe all workplace outbreaks should be made public? And the results are 92% of the respondents said yes, 8% said no. So 92% of the people believe that outbreaks, workplace outbreaks, should be made public. So thank you for that, Paul. Next, we're going to go to a question by Wendy. Wendy, please go ahead.
Hi. Hi, Mayor Brown and Dr. Lowe and Dr. Mohammed. I'm an RN for over 30 years, and I have not been able to work since COVID-19 started in March because I have 3 to 4 comorbidities. So do you have a priority list before you start the general population that I can get my name on so I can get the vaccine? And any ideas to when that would be? Because I'd like to return to work and even to go and volunteer to give the vaccinations, but I have no idea as to when a date. Or would you have any idea?
Okay, so Dr. Lowe, you want to try that first?
Yeah, I mean, again, my perspective is, so this is actually one where I think Dr. Mohammed might be able to respond perhaps a bit better just to the specific instance. You know, it would depend on, as an RN, where you were working before and all those other pieces. But at this point in time, the province has unlocked for specific groups, as I mentioned, long-term care homes and also hospital workers. So I guess if you fell in the category of hospital worker previously, I would imagine that would be something that would be available to you at this point in time. So I don't know, Dr. Mohammed, just your perspective on this one.
Well, it all depends on if, as an RN, you work at a hospital. If you're working at any hospital in Ontario and you are a hospital staff, then you should be able to access the vaccination right now within the region that your employer is at. For example, if your employer is downtown, then you should be able to get the vaccine at University Health Network or St. Mike's, because those are the places that are doing vaccines right now. If you're not employed by a hospital and you're a nurse in a community, other than, of course, a long-term care home, because they're also included in the current tranche of vaccinations, then you just have to wait until the next batch or group of healthcare workers are included. The way this is going to work, I think, is you'll have the hospital and long-term care staff first, because that's where the highest number of cases are, and people coming to the hospital with illnesses are often coming unscreened, which means that we don't know if they have COVID or not, while outside in other organizations, most places are performing virtual care. So that group is second. So to answer your question, if you're not working in a hospital, then I'm sure the next set of criteria that come out will include other healthcare workers.
All right. Thank you, doctors. Next, we'll go to a question by Maria. Maria, please go ahead.
Hello. Happy New Year. Hello. Happy New Year. My question is, within the workplace, when a coworker you've been in close contact with falls ill with COVID, is your management, who is aware of the case, obligated to let you know that you've been exposed to a positive COVID case?
So, Dr. Lowe, you want to answer that question?
Absolutely. And this is certainly a circumstance. Every positive case that occurs in the region of Peel is investigated by Peel Public Health. And that includes cases in workplaces. During the course of a workplace investigation, we will identify, and typically if we're able to identify all the close contacts that the individual came in contact with, per the definitions of the contact tracing guidance, we would then subsequently reach out to those close contacts, especially in an outbreak situation. And so what you're describing, if you are a close contact if you were identified as a close contact, rather, you would hear about it. And if you haven't heard anything about it, then based on the course of the investigation, you would not necessarily be considered a close contact, but you should continue to self-monitor for symptoms and continue to follow the precautions to limit the spread and reduce the chance of exposure. So, yeah, that's essentially the nature of investigations, case management, and contact tracing. And so Peel Public Health would certainly work with an employer in that situation to notify anyone who was identified as a close contact.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Lowe. Before we go to our next question, we're going to take our third poll of tonight. And the third poll asks, do you want elementary schools closed and online learning to continue for another week? Press 1 for yes or press 2 for no. So do you want elementary schools closed and online learning to continue for another week? Press 1 for yes, 2 for no. And we'll have the results a little bit later. But now we'll go to the next question, which is by Megan. Go ahead, Megan, please. Get Megan?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Hi, my question is for Dr. Lowe, and I'm an elementary school teacher in Brampton, and I'm just wondering, what is it going to take for you to advocate for the schools to close? Because as a teacher, I can tell you, schools are not safe. It is not that we are not doing enough in the schools. It's because we do not have control over the kids 24/7. We do not know where they go after school. We have to trust that the parents are doing the screening, but there are parents that are not, because there are students that are coming to school and they're sick. It may be a cold. It may be COVID. We don't know.
All right, Dr. Lowe, please.
First of all, thank you so much for the work that you're doing to keep students safe and learning. Second of all, I know it hasn't been easy, but I do know that, and I think we all agree, I mean, you know as a teacher, that there are tremendous benefits to having kids learning in person. And as a medical officer of health, I look at the overall health picture. It's not just the COVID-19 risk, which, and I'll get to that in a second, but we do know that there have been challenges with children who have been out of school for their education, for their socialization, for their mental health and well-being and development, and certainly for children who regrettably are experiencing things like abuse or other situations at home. We do know that the school is a safe haven for them. So, as a medical officer of health, I look at all of the health considerations and try to figure out where things are at in the course of my advocacy and recommendations to make sure that we're not just fixating on a single health issue to the detriment of others. That said, I want to make very clear that our levels of COVID-19 transmission right now as they stand are certainly concerning to me. And I think I have said so. I said so at our press conference with Mayor Brown. And I'm always of the opinion that when you're balancing all these different health risks, where the balance tips towards controlling COVID, you need to control COVID. And so certainly I welcomed the announcement that schools would be starting virtually. In fact, I had actually written correspondence to Dr. Williams ahead of the Christmas break requesting that there be at least virtual learning on returning from the holidays to provide a buffer along with other colleagues of mine from other health units. So I did advocate for the current virtual learning that is going through to the 11th for K-8 and then also for kids in high school through the 25th. That was me together with seven other medical officers of health colleagues in health units, and there is correspondence that the chief medical officer of health does have on record that has me advocating for that. In respect of where we go now, we do know that with the great work that all of you have been doing in schools, that schools have actually not seen massive propagated transmission the way that we have seen in other settings in the community. And that's really a testament to the work that you've all done in making sure that the cases that get introduced into those settings are not transmitting onwards. But I do agree with you that at this point in time, our community transmission levels remain significantly high, that we may see more and more cases that would warrant investigations, dismissals, and possibly closures. And so it's for this reason that at this time, especially as we're exploring what happens to K-8 starting next Monday, that we are in active dialogue with other health unit partners and also with the province to see what happens starting next Monday in respect of virtual learning versus in-person. And because these active discussions are happening right now, I'm not able to advise But I do, as I think the easiest thing I can say is that our levels of transmission in our community now resemble those that we were having back in December when I made my initial recommendations for the return from the holiday. So in terms of my position as to where things will go on Monday, I will leave it to you to sort of figure out what I'm thinking. But again, I'm hopeful to see what comes out of our discussions with the province and with other health unit partners in respect of your specific question for this specific moment in time. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Lowe. Next, we're going to go to a question by Rick. Rick, please go ahead.
Hi. I would like to know why the long-term care homes in Brampton haven't gotten any of the rapid tests, because my feelings is they could have used rapid tests for family members to come and visit their family on special occasions like Christmas, because mental health is just as important as physical health. My mother-in-law is 97 years old. She knew who her daughter was before this pandemic. She's been kept away from her mother for so long. Her mother-in-law, her mother doesn't know any of her kids now. So they were supposed to get these rapid tests, according to the premier. Why haven't they got any?
It's Mayor Brown here, and I can certainly relate to your concern. You know, my grandmother is in a long-term care facility that has been hard hit. They've had 43 fatalities, and I haven't been able to see her in a very long time. I used to visit her every Sunday. 106, and I can tell you she's aged more in the last year than any other year in her life, because I think there's a real mental health cost to not being able to see loved ones, and she's got poor hearing, so it's not like communication is very effective through digital means. Having said that, I think there are challenges with the reliability of rapid tests. There's challenges that no one wants to be that person that brings in COVID-19 into one of these long-term care settings where it could be like a tinderbox. So it's just a horrible situation, but you know, I'll allow, and it hits home for me. That's why I wanted to give this preamble, but I'll have Dr. Lowe or Dr. Mohammed speak to the challenges over rapid test and how it may not necessarily give you an immediate 100% accuracy.
Yeah, so I'll start first, Mayor Brown. First of all, I'm really sorry to hear about your situation. I'm going to talk about three things real quickly. Firstly, overall, just the situation in long-term care homes. Secondly, the rapid test question specifically. And then thirdly, immunization. So it has been hard on long-term care homes in terms of the overall health picture. And again, like I said, I'm a medical officer of health. I look at everything. We do know that the measures that have been taken have helped to preserve and protect lives and really limit the potential introduction into homes. And we do know that, as Mayor Brown says, it's a tinderbox. It's also helped at least, or one of the things that we can do to help is to try to keep community levels of transmission down as much as possible to limit the possibility or risk that something's going to get into a home. Because the reality is that if you look at what's happening in the United States, they have the same long-term care issues that we have. The, you know, long-term care folks are isolated, and they have significant overall morbidity and mortality related to COVID-19 to boot because they didn't keep things under control. And so I think we have to really look at it from the perspective of the limitations on the long-term care homes have helped to keep people safe, have helped to reduce spread. There have been health impacts, but it has actually saved lives in the end and also helped to limit transmission in the community by also saving lives. It basically really, if anything, the difficulties and the hardness of this past year, the finger should be squarely pointed at the pandemic, which is a disaster. It's just a disaster like no other. It's, you know, a hurricane happens, it's over in a few days, but a pandemic that spreads from person to person for which you have no treatment, no cure, no vaccine, that is essentially what has led to ultimately the hardships that all of us have faced, and I really feel for you on that one. Just really quickly to things. So we at Peel Public Health had actually applied for rapid testing to occur in long-term care homes, and we did the same. We asked for long-term care homes, we asked for workplaces, subsequent to that, we continued to work, and the applications were made to our partners at Ontario Health Central Region. again, these came in just at the middle or beginning of December, the applications and the ability to use these tests, with an understanding of the limitations and caveat for which they could be used. They were to be used mostly in outbreak situations, not for things like visitation, et cetera, just given, as Mayor Brown's identified, the reliability of them if they're used in that manner. And so that's been a point which we have been trying to get from our provincial partners who oversee testing to get rapid tests here in our community, and we have advocated tirelessly, and I understand we are going to get some this week, but that leads me to my third point, which is we're now also vaccinating long-term care homes, right? So the hope is, we're going to have all of our long-term care homes covered with vaccine, pretty much by this week into early next week. All of our long-term care homes, residents and staff, will have are scheduled to receive a first dose, and then hopefully by the end of January they'll have two doses, which changes the game dramatically. In long-term care homes, hopefully starting by mid through end Feb into spring, especially as the vaccine coverage also starts to ramp up by end Feb into the community side of things. So the game is changing in long-term care. It's receiving a lot of attention with the vaccine rollout, and we'll continue advocating to our provincial partners to make sure that we have those rapid tests in the meantime. Thanks, and I'll pass it back to Lynn.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. Before we go to the next question, I want to give you the results on our third poll. So the question was, do you want elementary schools closed and online learning to continue for another week? And the results are for yes, 80%, for no, 20%. So 80% of the people, going back to that question we just had, have said yes, they would like to see elementary schools closed for another week. Thank you very much for the polls, for your answers to the polls. Next, we're going to go to Satwinder. Satwinder, are you online? Go ahead, please.
Hi. Thank you to all the leaders and the listeners on the call. I'm a international medical graduate, actually long-time resident of Brampton, and I studied medicine abroad and did some training in public health. And the question I have is a two-part question, and it's for all three leaders, Mayor Brown, Dr. Lowe, and Dr. Mohammed. The first question is, from the onset of the pandemic, there was talks about how this is a all-hands-on-deck effort, and I'm just wondering what opportunities have been created for international medical graduates or Canadians that studied medicine abroad to assist with the COVID-19 response. I do know that Mayor Brown was a vocal advocate for the ING group. There hasn't been a ton of traction since the early phase of the pandemic. And the second part question is, how can we engage in the important work that's going on? I'm seeing that there's a lot of IMGs that are unemployed or underemployed, and how can we help alleviate the strain on the system and remove some of that red tape?
Mayor Brown?
Well, we did petition the provincial government to allow foreign doctors or doctors living in Brampton and Peel region who have passed their equivalency exams to participate. But I think there are some institutional roadblocks that they have faced, but we will keep up our advocacy on that front, and thank you for the reminder.
Dr. Lowe, you want to add something to that?
No, I would agree with Mayor Brown. Certainly welcome the conversation once the chain rules change around licensure and all those other pieces, and grateful to Mayor Brown for his advocacy on that topic. Certainly happy to have conversations when the opportunity arises.
All right. Thank you very much. Next, we will go to a question by Louise. So, Louise, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. First, I just want to say that you're all doing a fantastic job, and I really enjoy these town halls. What I'm wondering, I don't understand why stores like Costco, Walmart, Superstore are allowed to have the whole store open when other stores have to be closed. And I understand that it is a provincial mandate, but can we not lead the troops and initiate something where they could only have the food and pharmacy open and people should not be allowed to shop in the other areas? It's really not fair to the other stores that all have to be closed and have to go by curbside
because I've been to stores and I've seen, like the other caller that called in and said, it's whole families that are there. They're making it, it's like a social activity, and they're out shopping. They're, you know, it's just not right. And I'm wondering if Brampton is willing to do something about it.
So great question, and first of all, I should say that Mayor Crombie and myself have petitioned the province about the favoritism we're seeing for big box stores. I found it very frustrating that a small retailer, I think of one in downtown Brampton, Restyle, that sells women's clothing, they never have more than two or three people in their store, yet you can go to Costco and there's, you know, 500 people selling women's clothing. And so the way it's set up right now is not fair, in my opinion, to small businesses. But the province and their emergency regulations overrule any local ones. They believe that the food supply is necessary to maintain that chain, and they continue to insist that Costco and Walmart and these big box stores must remain open. We even passed a motion at the Region Appeal asking the province to relook at this, but it doesn't appear like they're going to be doing so. One thing I do want to point out, though, is I get a lot of complaints. So people tell me that there are people not wearing masks at the Costco. There was a photo that was circulated very heavily on social media about a Costco that looked very crowded. Our bylaw team goes and visits the big box stores on a daily basis. And if they are not following public health protocols, the big box stores will face significant fines and significant consequences. But the photo that was shown on Facebook, and it had thousands of comments and thousands of views in Brampton, that is not located in Brampton. That photo was from a Costco in Vaughan. And maybe Paul Morrison, if he's on the call, if you could just share a quick update on how your team is taking the public health protocols seriously and how you're enforcing them within big box stores.
Thank you, Mayor Brown. Louise, yes, we are in the big box stores. We look at capacity of the building, how many people can go in. We look at the lineups outside. There's social distancing. There's a responsibility by these stores to maintain those distances and make sure everybody's safe. So what we do is we randomize our visits to these stores. We try to go as much as we can daily, and we don't go at the same time. We try to go at the peak times, but we do that in concert with our other partners as well. Public Health assists us with that. They do their checks. They do help us out there. But also the provincial team that the Premier put together, we have requested them to come down as well on occasion. And they come with 40, 50 officers, and they do make attendance in those stores to look for violations. Unfortunately, there are a large number of stores throughout our city. To make visits so more than once a day is a little bit daunting, but we do move it around and change it up so people don't expect us. And we get good compliance when we're there. We work with the managers. We work with their safety plans. We have long discussions, and we get very good compliance. So we are out there.
All right, thank you, Paul. That's, ladies and gentlemen, unfortunately, that's all the time we have tonight. I'm sorry for those we weren't able to get to your questions. We do have these regularly. We'll be back again in 3 weeks from now on January 27th. We will have our next Teletown, same time, and we please encourage you to come back and come and ask your questions. A lot of questions tonight about vaccination. You can certainly go to the website, both the Region Appeal and the City of Brampton websites, to find out more information if we haven't been able to get to your question tonight. But please do come back and talk with us again in 3 weeks from now. In the end, I want to thank you very much, and I'm going to give the last word to Mayor Brown.
And thank you, everyone, for being on our Teletown Hall tonight. We had 7,993 households participate. This is democracy in action, where you get to be heard. We have our top officials answer questions. It's nice to see how we can have political engagement in such a meaningful manner through modern technology. So thank you for caring about your city. Thank you for all our top officials for taking the time. You know, folks like Dr. Lawrence Lowe and Dr. Naveed Mohammed, Deputy Chief Randy Patrick, Paramedic Chief Peter Dundas, Alan, the entire team, they're swamped doing their jobs, but they take time to be available to you, and I'm grateful for their dedication to our community. So stay safe. Until next time, do everything you can to follow the advice of public health, and there are better days ahead, and we're going to get through this.
All right. Thank you, Mayor. Good night, everybody.